Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Psychic Teachers Book Club. I'm your host, Deb Bowen. My co-host, Samantha Fay, is away this week. And so it's just me and you, and I'm so happy that you're with me today. I thought a lot about what to do with today's show, and it occurred to me that just like in an English class, where, if you remember back in those days when you were in an English class, you were told it was really important to read the classics. You needed to read Shakespeare and Chaucer and Dickens and Emily Bronte and all those famous classic folks to pave the way for being able to read and evaluate modern literature. And I think the same is true with books in the metaphysical and spiritual and self-help world. I think that it's important to go back and take a look at the foundations that got us to where we are. And I'm not going to go so terribly far back, at least in my mind. It may seem that way to you, but to me, not doesn't feel so terribly long ago. So here's where I want to begin. In 1962-ish, a woman named Jean Dixon, who was a real estate broker and a devout Catholic and a psychic living in Washington, D.C., began to predict a terrible accident, an assassination for President Kennedy. And each year, some years before that, and then continuing for many years after that, every New Year's, Ruth Montgomery, who was a Washington reporter, would, in her annual prediction column, quote Jean's predictions. And she refused to quote Jean's prediction about Kennedy's assassination. She said, that's just too upsetting, and I can't do it. Well, as we all know, of course, President Kennedy was indeed assassinated on November 22nd, 1963, just as Jean Dixon predicted. So Ruth Montgomery then wrote a biography of Jean Dixon called A Gift of Prophecy. And because I was a teenager at that time, now I'm telling you how old I am, I read that book and was just fascinated. And there had always been a part of me that was fascinated with the occult, even as a young child, fascinated with what we then called gypsies. Today, of course, we know that they are the Romani people, but I was just enthralled. And just a few years later, in the late 1960s, Ruth Montgomery wrote another book called A Search for the Truth. And in this book, she traces her own beginnings to experiment and to learn about the metaphysical world, and she describes other famous psychics in the world. And so what happened for me with that book, A Search for the Truth by Ruth Montgomery, was that then I began to research the people she had written about. And Arthur Ford, Edgar Cayce, some of the greats of that era. I loved her book. She talked about automatic writing. She talked about crystal gazing. She talked about palm reading. She talked about cognitive dreams, precognitive dreaming. She talked about visitations from our loved ones on the other side. And that opened up a whole new world to me of being aware that there was so much more out there. And the more I could learn and the more I could read, then the happier I was. So that book, A Search for the Truth, then led me to another book that is still one of my favorites. It's by Jess, J-E-S-S, Stern, S-T-E-A-R-N, and it's called Edgar Cayce, The Sleeping Prophet. And it was I'm not sure when it was originally written. Gosh, a long time ago. It's old, as I said. It's one of the classics. Let me see if I can find when it was first written. The paperback edition was copyrighted in 1967, so I'm not sure about the hardback edition. A little earlier than that, I think, probably. But in any case, Edgar Cayce was an amazing man. Edgar Cayce was a farm boy from, I think it was Indiana, Illinois, I'm not sure, who was not very bright, didn't learn well, didn't do well in school, but he would go to sleep and have these amazing, what he thought were dreams. And eventually that morphed into his being able to go into a trance-like state and give amazing medical information to people. And he did that for many, many years. He not only was able to diagnose, and he had no medical background at all, and he was able to diagnose illnesses in people, and more importantly, he was able to connect those illnesses to a spiritual or psychological cause. And I'll come back to that and talk about that in a few minutes. He also made predictions about world events, that many of which have come true, some of which have not, but many of which have, and predictions well beyond our 2015. He gave lots of information about the lost cities of Atlantis and Lemuria, which we can't verify, really, but there's a lot of research on it. And Edgar Cayce ended up moving to Virginia Beach, Virginia. He tried lots of jobs, and he wasn't very good at many of them, because this really was his calling. He did eventually hire a woman who sat and wrote while he made his predictions. And so fortunately, most of his predictions are written and cataloged, and they are now kept in the ARE Institute in Virginia Beach, which was founded by Edgar Cayce's son, Hugh Lynn Cayce. And you might want to really take a look at that organization. It's ARE, in Virginia Beach. The organization does amazing things. They have terrific classes. They have online courses. They have an amazing library. So there are lots of documentation to back up Cayce's work, and there are now people who work out of the Cayce Institute who have met the criteria, that the very rigid criteria that the Institute sets forth for people who are associated with them. But reading about Edgar Cayce and his medical intuition then led me to look at the idea of the mind-body-spirit connection. And when I began to research that, doors opened up like you wouldn't believe. And one of the books that many years ago became almost a guidebook for me in so much of my life and my work, and is still today, is a book by Louise Hay called You Can Heal Your Life. And Louise Hay looks at the connections that our bodies have with our thinking and our feelings. Now, she does not deny, nor do I, that physical ailments are real. They're very real and really need medical attention, certainly. But also that it's important to look at perhaps an underlying connection with our psyche. For example, when one feels unsupported, your back hurts. When one feels like they just can't take any more from a situation, well, I can't stomach that. Our bodies have language for us. I can't stomach that. Get off my back. You're a pain in the neck. Headaches, you know, a lot of times that we know that we talk about tension headaches, that they have to do with emotions. We accept that. Interestingly, research in cardiovascular health is beginning to understand perhaps that when we talk about a broken heart, we really can sometimes have a broken heart. I'm just fascinated with that idea. And Louise Hay, who is in her 90s now, founded Hay House Publishing, and that organization does oh so much. It has a wonderful radio program, and of course is and houses many other very famous writers and researchers today. Doreen Virtue, for example, is a part of the Hay House stable. So if you're, again, looking for resources of what might resonate for you to read, certainly try the Hay House website. It's a great place. Louise Hay led me then to K. Carolyn Meese, who is a medical intuitive, and that's spelled M-Y-S-S. And I love most of her books. My favorite is called Anatomy of Spirit, where she examines our health and our well-being in relationship to the functioning of our seven major chakra systems in our bodies. So I went off in a whole tangent of medical intuitive kinds of areas of learning about body that was fascinating to me. And some of those books were my guidebooks and still are today. I don't mean to say that I still don't use these books. I do. And then, also at about the same time, I was reading Ruth Montgomery and Edgar Cayce. I had two very good friends who are still my two best friends. All these years later, 40-some years later, the three of us are still best friends. And we went on this search together of trying to learn about this metaphysical world. And at about the time we were doing that, we realized we weren't alone, that we really were reaching what the rock opera Hair said, the dawning of the age of Aquarius. We were moving into what was called the New Age. And the world exploded with books and resources about the metaphysical world and about spirituality. And I have to tell you that one of those books was by Shirley MacLaine. Now, Shirley MacLaine got panned for this book. Folks said lots of nasty things about Shirley MacLaine and this book. It's called Out on a Limb. And in this book, she claims to have gone to Peru with a man who said that he had met a woman named Maya from the Pleiades, that there were extraterrestrials everywhere, all around us, that there was so much connected interdimensionally that we couldn't even begin to comprehend it with our brains here on Earth. But one of the, and I, you know, I took Shirley at face value with this book. I, having read all of her books, everything she's read, I believed her. I believe she had that experience. But included in this book was her struggle to make some sense out of all of this. She said she experienced this, but it was hard for her. And she includes in this book a reading list of books that she read to try to help her understand. So this book became another jumping-off place for me for a lot of other books. And I just love it. It's still one of my favorite books, Out on a Limb by Shirley MacLaine. And one of the books that Shirley led me to was also an older book by Raymond Moody. Now, Raymond Moody is still alive. It's M-O-O-D-Y, Raymond Moody. And he wrote lots of books. But one of them was entitled Life After Life, and it's about near-death experiences, which Samantha and I talked about last night on our Psychic Teachers podcast. We talked about near-death experiences and talked about Raymond Moody. But Raymond Moody researched near-death experiences. He researched reincarnation. He researched out-of-body experiences, also called astral projection. And that led me to some other experiments and ideas. Raymond Moody's work led me to studying near-death experiences with folks like Embraced by the Light by, Beatty, I can't remember her first name, and Saved by the Light by Daniel Brinkley, who was hit by lightning twice and had near-death experiences and lived to tell the tale. Raymond Moody also led me to Robert Monroe, who researched out-of-body or astral projection experiences. And his Monroe Institute in Blacksburg, Charlottesville area, Virginia, is still very much functioning. Robert Monroe now has passed on, but his organization is still functioning. And there's another resource for you if you're interested in learning about how the brain works. They do a lot of research with brain activity and the notion of out-of-body experiences. fascinating. But all of these places, the Monroe Institute, Edgar Cayce Institute, are places that are on my bucket list of places to go now that I have some time in my life to go there. So let me take a break real quickly and tell you who I am and what this show is about, and then we'll get back to talking about some other books as well. I know I've been throwing a lot of books at you very quickly, but they all are so interrelated and intertwined to me, so I'll come back to that. My name is Deb Bowen. I co-host this show normally with Samantha Fay. Samantha is away this week and next week, but I will be with you talking about all sorts of books over the next 2 weeks. Samantha and I are psychics. We are life coaches. We do lots of different other services. We do past life regressions, for example. We both have on our websites various products that we sell. And one of the things that Samantha and I have that are on my website are courses that you can download for only $20 on a variety of subjects. So I would appreciate it if you would check those out. My website is www.debbowen.com. That's two B's. www.debbowen.com. And Samantha's is Samantha Fay, and Fay is spelled F-E-Y.com. So we would certainly appreciate you checking those our websites out. And also, certainly, we would love to have you join us on Sunday evenings for our Psychic Teachers podcast. Both of these shows are available. Both the Psychic Teachers show and the Book Club show are also available for download on iTunes. With this show, you need to go to our Blog Talk address, which is blogtalkradio.com/Psychic Teachers Book Club, and link to iTunes that way. We're not quite sure why that is at the moment. We're still trying to work out the bugs with iTunes. But in any case, you can certainly get both shows on iTunes. Psychic Teachers, that airs on Sunday night, is now over 5 years old, and we're up to almost 80,000 listeners a month on that show. So we hope you might consider taking a look at that. Folks seem to like it, and we appreciate that. Okay, so let's see. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, all these books that connect to each other. What happens then for me in this journey of learning about the spirituality of the body, of learning about interesting ideas in terms of out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, and the notion of reincarnation, then led me to read Ken Carey's Return of the Bird Tribe, led me to read James Redfield's The Celestine Prophecy, and the sequel to that called The Tenth Insight. The Celestine Prophecy is an interesting book in that it proposes, first of all, there's an aspect of the book I don't like. I need to tell you that. It's couched as fiction. So it's basically, you know, it's kind of this hokey little story. And I wish he hadn't done that. I wish he had just written about what he needed to write about, but he didn't. But The Celestine Prophecy introduced me to the idea of soul groups, that we incarnate through many lifetimes with a group of people who have all helped each other, have agreed to help each other learn life lessons from one lifetime to another, which I found just fascinating. And I had already read about that in Illusions, which was our book for the past 2 weeks. So if you go back and listen to an archived edition of this show, you can hear 2 weeks where we talked about Illusions by Richard Bach. So I was fascinated with that idea that we choose our parents, we choose our families, we basically, it's almost like creating our own movie of each lifetime, and how we agree to sometimes be the woman who in this lifetime is our mother, may have been our brother in a past life, and how we have certain lessons that we have agreed to come into each lifetime to learn, and we change roles to be of help to each other as we create these dramas that we do from one lifetime to another. James Redfield was fascinating in the Celestine Prophecy about that. And in the 10th Insight, which is the sequel, he goes further to say that with the awareness of our soul groups, not only do we have an opportunity to work out our own karmic debts and relationships, but we can do work together to heal the planet, which I just love. I just love that. And that, of course, then was also a jumping off place for me to read about the environment and our connection to Mother Earth. And that led me to Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, where she predicted some 40 or 50 years ago the terror and travesty of what is happening to Mother Earth today. So if you haven't read Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, please add that to your list. And all of that then moved me into a direction of looking at peoples who respect the earth, who care for the earth. And I have a beautiful little book called Touch the Earth that's a picture book of photographs of First Peoples across this country with some beautiful quotes from some First Peoples from a couple of centuries and from various tribes. And that led me to, in 1970, and I'm sort of jumping around here in terms of time, that led me to read Dee Brown's book entitled Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. And Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee changed my life forever. In reading that book, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I had to go home. And home for me was Wounded Knee, South Dakota. Now, that's a long ways away from where I live, folks. I'm an old beach girl. I grew up with sand between my toes and got an oyster knife for my fifth birthday. And South Dakota is a long ways away from here. So when I was graduating high school, I told my father that I was going to South Dakota. And this was the language back then, so pardon it. I said, I'm going to South Dakota and I'm going to be a teacher on an Indian reservation. And he said, no, you're not. That's not going to happen. And because of the year it was and because of my relationship with my father, he was right. I didn't go. And I have often wondered, and you know, where we all have those turning points in our lives where we wonder what would have happened if we had taken a different road. And that's one of mine. But I didn't go. I didn't get to Wounded Knee until 2001. And by then, I was much older, of course, and took a group of students with me. And I remember standing on that hill the very first time. Wounded Knee, if you're not familiar with this concept, Wounded Knee, South Dakota, was the site of the last military engagement between the American Army and First Peoples. It wasn't much of a military engagement at all. It really was a massacre. There were 350 basically unarmed old men, women, and children who were massacred by the 7th Cavalry at Wounded Knee, South Dakota, on December 29th, 1890. I was, when I finally stood on that hill, at the mass grave that had been dug and all of those people had been tossed into and buried by the army, I became a different person. I understood then that everything on this planet and beyond is deeply and cosmically connected. The Lakota people have a word for that. It's Metakiasi. Doesn't sound or at all like it is spelled, but Metakiasi. That idea is we are all related, but it is so much deeper than that. It is that every being on this planet is connected to every other being, and that includes Mother Earth herself and what the First Peoples call the standing people, meaning plants, the four-legged, the winged, the swimming, the crawling, and the two-legged people. Everything is people. There is no hierarchy. There is this connection that is lateral and loving among all beings. Now, that is certainly something to strive for. But that idea then moved me into a study of quantum physics. Now, I don't begin to tell you, couldn't begin to tell you, that I know a darn thing about quantum physics. I know about Schrodinger's cat, and that's about it. But at some deep level, I understand the notion. And I understand the notion that quantum physics and the idea that everything is energy and that everything vibrates, what makes us different is the rate at which we vibrate. When I began to understand that, I began to understand that the Lakota people with the concept of Mattakiasi understood that far, far earlier than we did in our scientific methods. And that led me to Gary Zukav's book called The Dancing Woolly Masters. It led me to Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Presnick. Robert Presnick, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Gary Zukav's The Dancing Woolly, W-U-L-I, Masters, The Dancing Woolly Masters. So then I began to realize that not only were medical topics connected to spirit, that so was science connected with spirit. And this whole idea of religion and science being diametrically opposed to each other just wasn't real. That just isn't real. That they're really the same. The language may be different, but at some point, and somebody asked me this once, somebody asked me if I thought there would ever come a time when science could measure God. And I laughed and said, wonder if the time will ever come when God can measure science. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that there's this wonderful connection, and just fascinated with that. Some of that also led me into Eastern thought, which I will talk some about next week. I will talk more about that. But I want to backtrack and talk about another book that came out at about the same time that Dee Brown's book was published. Dee Brown's book was published in 1970, and that's Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. And just a little bit before that, a man who had been a professor at Harvard, whose name was Richard Alpert, who changed his name to Ram Dass, meaning servant of God, wrote a book called Be Here Now. Be Here Now. And that book was partly, it was this, you know, this hippie cult book, but it also outlined the idea of so much of what came after with that connection of our needing to be fully present, that all we have is this moment, the concept of that time is not linear, the idea that there is a connectedness of about everything. Interestingly, Richard Bach, Ram Dass, wrote that book, Be Here Now, in the late 60s. Ram Dass had a stroke a few years ago and is now wheelchair-bound, but he is still rocking and rolling and still writing. And he wrote a book about his experience with his stroke called Still Here. Those two books led me to Eckhart Tolle's book called The Power of Now. And I'll talk more about that next week because now I'm out of time. Thank you all so very much for being with me. I hope that this smorgasbord of titles has been helpful to you. And we will do the same thing next week with some other books. In the meantime, I hope you have a great week and be the light. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.